U. The new Miami, the new Miami, the new Miami. Surge, surge, the new Miami, the new Miami, the new Miami. Surge, surge.
It's the same thing when we walk through. With the U ain't no bark, dude. Straight dog when we bring the fight. Ain't scared of no bright light.
Welcome back to the Wide Ride Podcast. I'm Manny Navarre, your Miami Hurricanes beat writer for The Athletic. And it's Monday. We're recording around 3 p.m. The Canes are 6-1, ranked ninth in the AP poll, coming off that 44-41 win at NC State. And we've brought on somebody you're very familiar with, Kelvin Harris, former three-time national championship winner at the University of Miami, starting center for Gino Toretta on the 91 championship team. Kelvin, how you doing, man?
I can't complain.
So
back out.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, they won. They're 6-1, and you know, Clemson's the only loss. Think they're top 10 team. Things are going well, but you would think if you just read everything on Twitter and you read everything on social media that, you know, Blake Baker would have been fired by now. I'm curious how you've sort of taken the reaction from the fan base. Is it something you expected coming off a 44-41 win, or
well, they're fans.
Yeah,
I mean I think just the fans. I got a couple of my alumni constantly texting me during the game, this and that. Look, he didn't make any calls that, you know, you say, well, that was stupid. There were some situations where their receivers made some really good plays. The quarterback played out of his mind for 3 3/4 of a game, 3 3/4 quarters. And then, you know, they had a bye week. So obviously their coaching staff was smart enough to switch some stuff up after they got their ass run through the week before. You know, the game before. So they were like, well, we got to do something different. They did a good job of scouting us. So they implemented plays that had beaten us before, especially like that first series where they used basically the same play that Clemson scored on. So it took the guys a while to figure it out. 3 quarters, actually. But when they figured it out, you know, it was interesting because I looked at the little press conference that Manny does, and he was saying it's just like something that just clicked, you know, when they went out fourth quarter. And it's like, you know, after you've seen something enough, you start getting a pattern. And, you know, when you watch film during the week and you go through it in practice, you get a pattern. But if they change up the tendencies, now you got to figure out the tendencies again. And it just took a while, but that is what 2020 is all about, making adjustments, being uncomfortable, learning how to deal with that, and coming through with a win. And that's what we did.
You and I talk a lot off air all the time about this team, about this program, so I always forget which conversation it is that we talked about it. But, you know, people, I think, have sort of – they have to come to accept that – college football is different from when it was in the 80s and 90s, and Miami was the dominant power that had the kind of depth that when you had guys out, you know, the next guy coming in was going to go to the NFL too. Like, this roster isn't built like that. And there's only probably three teams, maybe four, in college football that are deep like those old Miami teams were. And that to me is like, you know, Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State. And, you know, I think the fact that Miami's been in these dogfights, that they've won 44-41 and 19-14, and well, I forgot how much they beat Pitt by. I think it was 12 points or whatever it was.
31-19.
Yeah, 31-19. I mean, these scores.
The Virginia game wasn't a dogfight.
Well, it was in the last 5 minutes just because they got that late touchdown. But just the point is, Miami's not just going to come out and steamroll teams, and just because they're in the top 10 doesn't mean that that's going to change. Like, all of a sudden they're going to become that. I think there is a sizable gap between Miami and everybody else in terms of the elites. And, you know, the reason they lost to Clemson 42-17 is because Clemson is that on that elite level. Miami's not there yet. And I think, you know, these teams get up for Miami. They save certain parts of their game plan. They throw in new wrinkles, all those kind of things. And that's what you're seeing week to week, right? You're seeing teams that, that kind of go uncharacteristic. And I know there's Miami fans that say, oh, why aren't the coaches ready for that? They should prepare their guys. But there are things that are being saved, especially for Miami, right?
Well, case in point, UAB. It came out in a completely different defense.
Mm-hmm.
This week, pretty much the same thing with NC. They ran the base defense, but they added a wrinkle to it. They ran the 46 defense. They were not going to let us run the ball inside. Eventually, we warmed down and we started moving the ball. Actually ran pretty good. I've said this to you many times. These kids are playing ghosts. You know, they've got like 3-4 opponents every week. They're playing team across. Then they're playing us. You know, they're playing the alumni because the expectations are they have to be us. They have to be, you know, my era and the 2001, 2002, 2000 era. Well, that's just unrealistic. And your point about there's teams with depth, Saturday night proved that there's nobody with depth. Nobody. Not Clemson, not Alabama, not Ohio State. Nobody. Because you see what happened when Clemson lost two guys. They got their ass roasted. It's there are very few freaks out there. Pretty much all of these kids are the same kid. There's like I look around, okay. Jalen Waddle. He's unique. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, unique. Sewell, Oregon, unique. Oof. That's about it. I'll say this. Derek King is unique in that he has the ability to carry a team. There's not many guys like that. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Derek King, Sam Howell. Am I missing anybody?
No. I mean, in the ACC, I think you pretty much hit it on the head. I'm glad you brought up De'Aaron King because that was a performance for the ages. First of all, there's not many quarterbacks who throw for 400 yards and run for 100 yards, and then much less throw 5 touchdown passes in the process, especially at the Power 5 level. It just doesn't happen.
He's done it twice.
He's done it twice, right. Look, I think the one thing we've seen from De'Aaron King here these last couple weeks, even against Virginia, is he's got the arm strength and he's got the arm to get the ball where it needs to go. He just needs those receivers to come up and make those catches, and that's what's happened the last 2 weeks. That's been the difference. He's gone from 6 of 30 on throws 20 yards downfield to all of a sudden, I think he's got – I got the numbers here in front of me because I did all the damn research. Let me find it here. The last 2 weeks, 20 yards downfield or longer, 6 of 8 for 187 yards and a touchdown against Virginia, 6 of 13 for 176 yards and 3 touchdowns against NC State. The crazy thing is he'd probably be in the Heisman discussion. If
not for the Clemson game.
If not for the Clemson game and if the receivers would have come through because he was throwing, he was giving them chances. He was putting the ball out there. But 6 for 30 to start the season for 205 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, he's really turned it around just in these last 2 games. And it's because the guys are turning it around, the receivers.
Well, it's continuity. They only had 4 practices in spring. Summer workouts were abbreviated. 2 days was different. So, you know, they come in and, you know, Rhett Lashley told you guys beginning of the year it's going to take a while. Well, it's here.
Yeah, it took half the season. Took half the season. It's about.
That sounds about right. Offense is always behind defense. What I would hope is, I'm foreshadowing here, that we run it back next year.
Mm-hmm.
We could be LSU of 2019. Everything.
Well, that's the interesting part because I think that's the next chapter of discussion with this team is how many of these guys say to themselves, I'm going to take advantage of the NCAA rule that allows me to come back and play an extra year? Because
it's only one that matters.
Yeah, I just think that's been the biggest hurdle for Miami is losing these guys. And you talk about the cornerback play. You know, we can break that down in a minute. But, you know, imagine how different these guys would be if Trajan Bandy was back. Or what if Jeff Thomas had decided, you know what, I don't want to go and be on an NFL practice squad and then out of football. I'm going to give school another year because I didn't have a great junior year. How different would this roster be had Miami changed just those two guys, you know,
and convince
them to come back? I think that's an important dynamic here going forward with guys like Bubba Bolden and guys like Jalen Phillips and you know, certainly Mike Harley, right? I mean, is Mike Harley going to be a first or second day pick in the NFL? Probably not. Just off of these last 2 weeks, I think he's gotten the attention of scouts who are like, oh, wait a minute, he's got something. But that doesn't mean he's going to be a first or second day pick. So will Mike Harley consider coming back and saying, hey, you know what? I can really put up some great numbers now. I've figured this thing out. I can be a star receiver in this league in the ACC and potentially lead Miami to bigger things. That's going to be sort of the interesting part of what happens, I think, over the next
month. I got to be honest. I didn't even think about him, but yeah, you got a point.
You know, I don't know. It's funny because then D'Eric comes out after the game against NC State and he says, well, Mike and I don't have much more time here, you know, and like we're trying to get this thing done right, which tells you. And look, there's nothing wrong with having those dreams of going to the NFL. Right. But it just shows you that to me, that kind of quote shows you where their mind is at. Right. Like that they're trying to like really blow up here because they care about their NFL stock. And you know that more than anybody else, Kelvin. That's you're a player. You know that's what those guys are thinking.
Well, you got to understand something. I don't even really think it's sinking into a lot of, not just our kids, but a lot of senior kids around the country, that they technically got a free pass. This is a mulligan year, and I don't know if it's really sunk in yet, but, you know, at some point you got to start looking at, you know, we know about Game of Thrones. Well, then there's Game of Draft, and you got to understand how the draft works. And, you know, a guy like Harley, that wouldn't be a bad move. And actually with D'Eric, it all depends on what his goal is.
Mm-hmm.
If he wants to make the NFL and, you know, play a couple years, probably a wide receiver to make some money for his family. Yeah, maybe he could go this year. Because even if he does finish strong, there are some guys in the NFL who just won't do it because of his height. It's, you know, no matter how good Kyler Murray looks this year, they're just not going to change their mind. But the reason why I say we could be LSU 2019, if those guys run it back and come back, he becomes Charlie Ward. Because a lot of fans don't notice. Charlie Ward was in school 6 years. He didn't have the grades when he came out of high school, so he went to Tallahassee Community College for half a semester. Then he went to FSU and redshirted. And then, you know, he had to wait behind Casey Weldon and Brad Johnson. And this is a little known fact. He was the punter for FSU in the Wide Right One game.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then he became the quarterback in 92 and 93. I mean, and with the way that today's game is going, if Derek King comes back, he'll be one of the three or four finalists for the Heisman. No doubt. I would put him as a Heisman favorite, him and Sam Howell. And what that does is you put up numbers like how Kyler Murray put up, your draft stock changes because next year there's not a lot of great quarterbacks. It's Sam Howell, it's Caden Slovis, it's possibly Jaden Daniels at Arizona State, but he won't be a first rounder, I don't think. Neither will Michael Penix Jr. You know, some people will look at the Joe Milton kid at Michigan, but Michigan's, yeah, I don't know. You know, he's got the size, but. And then another guy that's probably in the same boat as Derek King is Felipe Franks. Maybe he comes back, and then he'll be in the mix. But there aren't a lot of great quarterbacks. So, you know, but if he comes back next year, and for whatever reason, Bubba Bolden and say Jalen Phillips decide to come back, man, could get interesting.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, a couple things to note as far as King's improvement. And again, this just shows you how he's getting better as the year goes on. Handling the pressure. You know, NC State pressured him 16 times. He was 9 of 13 for 151 yards and 2 touchdowns when he got pressured. Earlier in the year, you know, before that game, he was 10 of 28. So he took a step forward in dealing with that. And then against the blitz, the last two games, he's actually 20 of 28 against the blitz for over 300 yards and 5 touchdowns. Earlier this season, his numbers were much lower in terms of, you know, conversion rate, touchdowns, that kind of stuff. So he's growing as a passer. He's improving both of those areas just over the last two games. And again, well, a lot of it has to do with his receivers, but I think it also has to do with him being better.
His passes hadn't got that much better. The receivers and the blitz pickup has gotten better.
Yeah. I mean, the guys around him are playing better, but he's also, I mean, it's helping him in the numbers that the NFL looks at, because they look at that stuff. They look at how does a guy convert on third down? What's he like in the red zone? What's he like when he faces the blitz? What about when the pressure actually gets there? What kind of decisions he make? From an NFL quarterback perspective, the last two games, his completion percentage and his numbers have improved in those areas. And that helps him in the eyes
That's what they may tell you, but mm-hmm. the guys who study the quarterbacks are looking at the film, and mm-hmm. they're looking at how he actually sits in the pocket, what his accuracy is, a legitimate concern was outside the number ball.
Mm-hmm. Outside the hashes?
Yeah.
Yeah,
outside the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, because I guess you could say outside the hashes, yeah, but yeah.
Well, he's 7 of 12 going down the right sideline the last two games. Before that, he was 1 of 14.
Yeah, the continuity's gotten better with the guys, but yeah. He can make all the throws. He's got enough arm strength. He's got great touch. He's developed his Russell Wilson type rainbow throw. I just think that, you know, like Rhett Lashley said to you guys, I think in preseason or even the first week, it's going to take a while for it all to get together. And they're starting to form. Now, this week, you got a Virginia Tech defense that's a hot mess. We're going to see if their will was broken by the coaching blunders that cost them that game, or will they come out with fight in them? But either way, we have to come with our military boots on and stomp their throat.
Well, I'm actually going to play a clip. I interviewed Andy Bitter right before you and I got on the call. And so he and I broke down kind of what's been going on with Virginia Tech. And as a little teaser, I will tell you, he threw this stat at me today, but under Justin Fuente, I think after a loss, Virginia Tech is 13-4 or something like that. I think that's the record. So they usually respond well after a bad loss. Here, actually, before they beat Miami here at Hard Rock Stadium, they had one of those devastating losses. They got blown out by Duke the week before they came down here and played Miami. And then for whatever reason,
his job was on the line.
Yeah. Yep. And Vegas.
Matter of fact, I think me and Andy talked about it on my podcast where he was basically talking about, would this be the week if we lost this game with his job be on the line and we threw him a life raft.
Mm-hmm.
that's why he was celebrating in the locker room so much, because basically he knew that if he lost that game to us, he probably was going to go house hunting in another neighborhood.
They saved their season with that win.
They have – we saved his job because, hey, the natives were restless. But this last game, it was just some blunders all the way around, you know, between him and the defensive coordinator. And, you know, he tried to clean it up in his press conference by saying that, you know, the kids were winded after the blocked field goal. But, hey, man, you were the one who called timeout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't a very smart decision on his part. but so just to wrap up the Canes' thoughts, everybody, obviously, we started off talking about defense. I asked Manny Diaz today, you know, about the breakdowns in the secondary. And basically what he said was, look, we got beat by some better receivers, by some guys, Amezi, who could play for anybody, including Clemson, according to Manny. And
I agree.
And then he said the problem was, the letdown was, they let it affect the next play. And on those crossing routes and so forth. So the good news is Virginia Tech doesn't have some tremendous passing. I mean, Hendon Hooker is a great, to me, is what the balance of what he does. I mean, he's very good at both running and throwing the football. But he's got three receivers. It's a different kind of offense than what Miami faced last year with NC State. And Khalil Herbert probably is not going to play in that game. So to me,
if he does play, he's going to be limited because a hamstring just doesn't pop back like that.
Right, right. So I think this matchup this week, there's an opportunity for Miami secondary to bounce back is what I'm saying.
Yeah, this is a slump buster. It's the 2 o'clock pickup in the club, 3 o'clock. That you don't even really want to know her name. She doesn't really want to know yours.
She just wants to go home.
Yeah, you get your confidence back. You move on with your life. Maybe you guys run into each other, you know, 5 years later. Hey, I remember you. That's what Virginia Tech should be this week. I think we can put 50 up on.
Notre Dame beat Clemson, which we touched on earlier briefly for a minute, how they did it obviously without having to face Trevor Lawrence. But Notre Dame is now in the driver's seat to get to the ACC championship game. I thought Miami needed Notre Dame to lose that game because
North Carolina's going to beat them.
Okay. Well, that's what you had told me over the phone. I was about to get to that. You still think there's a chance Miami can get to the ACC championship game, right?
Yeah. See, first of all, we're number 9 right now. Now, I will say this. I don't normally agree with Streeter on a lot of stuff, but, you know, he's an opinionated guy. He's not crazy out there, but some of his thought process is a little different than mine. But I do agree with him on this. If we can put up style points the next couple of weeks, when the rankings come out, we'll be positioned to stay 9-8 or better, because there's going to be some more losses. And then it's just a matter of winning out and wait for people to lose.
Does Miami need to make the ACC championship game? If they, let's say they don't get in and they finish 10-1 and they go to a good bowl game, is that still acceptable in your mind? Are you happy with that?
Yeah. I mean, because it's the best we could do, you know, with the circumstances. Now, I don't foresee Clemson losing again. And looking at Notre Dame's schedule, North Carolina is the one I think that we got to be realistic about as to who beat them. So, in a sense, we got to root for North Carolina, not just to beat Notre Dame, but to kind of put an ass on them so that they drop enough that we can move up enough. Because I think the tiebreaker is the two highest ranked teams.
Well,
which is what we're fighting. I mean, think about this. We could be a top 10, maybe even a top 5 ranked team and not make the championship game.
There's a possibility that if other teams lose, that Miami could move into the top five or six and not get into the playoff because you got Texas A&M ahead of you. Florida's going to play Alabama in the ACC championship game. If Texas A&M wins out, they will finish ahead of Miami and could get into the playoff. I mean, there's other teams in position. BYU could end up finishing undefeated and finish ahead of Miami.
I'm just not respecting BYU. I can't do it.
Yeah, I get it.
I mean, they're playing Doral and Miami Christian. You know, in Fort Lauderdale, Westminster, and they're undefeated.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I can't do that.
Well, Calvin, I appreciate you coming on, man, and doing the segment with me and talking Canes. I'm gonna get to my interview with Andy Bitter in a second, but what's your prediction for Saturday before we let you go?
We should score 40 points.
So what Miami covers, if they score 40 and win, they cover that spread, right? Because it's 2 points for the other team. So you're picking Miami victory, right?
Yeah, I don't see Virginia Tech scoring 40 points on us.
Okay. All right, fair enough. I'm gonna go with Miami 38-35. I think it's gonna come down to a final possession. I think
it could. I don't think it will though. I think, you know, they've got a couple of decent receivers, but their receivers have been inconsistent. And their quarterback's just not very accurate. So once you get into the tendencies and you figure out what they're running, the one good thing we got is that Manny and Blake, this is his second go round with this, but this is Manny's and Banda's and Packy's like fifth time seeing this. So they're very familiar with the scheme. Mm-hmm. And with Puente and what he likes to call in his patterns. So I think that's going to help. Plus, they just don't have – now, they do have a pretty good offensive line. Darisaw, left tackle is rated pretty highly, but I'm taking Roche over him.
Well, Roche had a tough time last week. I think you can look at the opposite side and say maybe Phillips has a big game again. I mean, Roche, unfortunately, from where he lines up facing the left tackle – he faced a good one.
He played good.
No, he played all right. I was just saying getting to the quarterback, getting pressures and sacks, that may not happen. But that may help Jalen Phillips or Nesta or other guys have a bigger day. But, you know, individually, Roche may not put up a bunch of numbers. That doesn't mean he doesn't play well. So,
well, I don't know if we're going to have a lot of sacks for the simple fact that this guy is – look, he's going to go back. He's going to look for his main receiver, and then he's running.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to play with a spy because this dude, he reminds me, he's a, what's the kid, Bryce Perkins from Virginia?
Yeah.
He's got a similar mindset, but with a less talented arm. You know, he's not very accurate. He's got strength, but he's just not, like if he had to sit back in the pocket, we beating him like 70 to something because he can't do that. But
mm-hmm.
he's a run threat and that keeps you on your toes and that sets you up for play actions and boots. But I don't know. I just think that if they're keyed in like they were the fourth quarter against NC State, I think we can shut them down. And then we don't really have the distraction of the big crowd and, you know, that song they keep playing. What's that damn dun 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 dun? Dun.
Oh, the Metallica stuff that they play? Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, the Metallica song "Enter Sandman" or whatever that they play.
They play that thing all game long.
Yeah, the atmosphere will be different. It's not going to be a packed house or anything like that. So that's interesting. Calvin, we got to go, man. But I appreciate it. Thank you very much for coming on, and I'm going to talk to Andy Bitter next. All right, so now we're going to break down Saturday's game with Andy Bitter, our Virginia Tech beat writer here at The Athletic. Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Covering an interesting team this year, all of a sudden. Never a dull moment on the Virginia Tech beat, it seems.
No, you know, it was such an interesting start for them. I thought them and Miami and North Carolina for a while. I was like, okay, this is going to be a great battle to see who the third best team in the conference is behind Clemson and Notre Dame. And then, you know, North Carolina goes out and loses sort of a head scratcher at Florida State. And then they followed up with another loss. And then VTech has a couple of losses that you're not expecting, including this past weekend against Liberty. I jumped on your Zoom call with Coach Justin Fuente just to kind of hear what was going on with Justin Herbert, because not Justin Herbert, Khalil Herbert. I call him Justin Herbert. I don't know why I keep doing that. Maybe because he's my fantasy quarterback. Khalil Herbert.
I dropped Herbert in my fantasy league.
You
smart
did?
Smart guy that I am.
I kept him. I actually picked him up off the wire, I think the second week of the season. And happened to just have the right waiver wire transaction there. But Khalil Herbert, Juice Herbert, as he's known, ended up, I guess, just playing the opening kickoff against Liberty. And we know how pivotal he is to this Hokies offense. What are the chances that he plays this week against Miami?
Unclear. That's as clear as I can be about that, is I don't really know. And Justin Fuente is not one to give injury updates or give any kind of insight on that, so he did not help us much today. He said if he's good to go, he'll play, and if not, he won't play. And they just don't know at this point. But it certainly changes the complexion and the scope of this offense. All of a sudden to lose a guy who's on track to be their first 1,000-yard rusher in 5 years, that's a big blow. And he's been sort of the consistent heartbeat of this offense each week, and that he just kind of churns out these yards. This running game gets going behind this offensive line, and now absent that, that really puts a lot of the onus on Hendon Hooker, quarterback, to take over the rushing game. He did last week. He ran for 156 yards, but that's asking a lot for one guy to do, and they really need to get those running backs back involved in the game. And if they could get Herbert back, that would help immensely, but it's just kind of unclear if he's going to be able to do it this week.
Yeah, that's going to be a big storyline, obviously, as we get closer to kickoff. So I encourage our listeners to follow you on Twitter at AndyBitterVT to get the update, because I'm sure at some point, maybe right up until kickoff, you won't know whether or not he's going to play unless somehow they decide to declare him out later this week. As far as Virginia Tech goes, this 38-35 loss to Liberty, I went back and watched parts of the game, and you know, it was very winnable for them. You could see how much it hurt Justin Fuente to lose that game, especially sort of the controversy at the end, you know, calling the timeout right when the field goal was blocked, and then not being able to sort of set up their defense for the ensuing play, and they give up another sort of gain there that makes the kick a little bit shorter, and then to lose it on a last-second kick. What's sort of the mentality of these players right now, and what was it like after that game?
It was a pretty devastating loss. You know, Fuente took it pretty hard. He has defended the timeout that he called. He just said that he didn't get it in early enough. He always likes to call timeout and get the field goal defense set up correctly with the right personnel. Honestly, I don't agree with him on that. I feel like if your opponent is going to try a 59-yard field goal, you just let them. let them try it. If they make it, you tip your cap to them. If not, don't give them any more time to think better of the whole situation. Fuente seems to think that the timeout was still right. He just didn't get it in at the right moment. That led to the unfortunate thing where they blocked it, returned it for a touchdown, and it doesn't count. You can imagine how devastating that is for a player. If you go through that play, you have perhaps the most resounding, ecstatic ending to a game possible. I mean, how many times do you see a block kick, walk-off touchdown, and then it doesn't count? So they have to turn around and get lined up for a defensive play. Don't really get the personnel right. They're in a Hail Mary defense. Liberty throws it short to the sideline, then gets a shorter field goal to win it at the end. I mean, that's just a devastating turn of events. You know, a lot of players afterwards were, you know, not too talkative. I don't want to say they were less talkative than normal, because they're not really normally talkative in post-game interviews anyway. But I will say this about this team. This is one team that under Fuente, I believe they're 13-4 after a loss. Mm-hmm. And they've won all four of their games that they've lost after they've lost a game where they were a double-digit favorite like they were in this Liberty game. You know, the last year, I think the lowest point of possibly the Fuente era up to that point was that Duke loss, where they lost by 5 touchdowns at home last year, and they had Miami the next week. And that was the game where I want to say Miami was two touchdown favorites, at least in that game. I don't think a lot of people gave them a chance in that. And that was the game they came out, got up 28-0, and then hold on late for a win. And it really kind of turned the season around. So sometimes I feel like the best of these Justin Fuente teams you see is the week after they have just had a terrible performance and just not lived up to expectations. So it's sort of the zigzag theory with the Hokies. Like, whenever you expect them to do well, they don't. And when you have low expectations, they seem to come out and play pretty well. I don't know if that's enough to beat Miami in a game like this. I'm seeing how Miami's playing, and De'Aaron King offensively is going to be a problem. I mean, Malik Willis last week for Liberty was a problem. Malik Cunningham the week before that was a problem for the Hokies. De'Aaron King is going to be a problem for them on Saturday. But I do expect them to play better in this game, and Vegas does too. I was shocked to see that line. It opened at 2. I checked it today. It's 2.5. It actually went up a little bit.
Yeah.
Hokies favorite. I like that. Just boggles my mind that they could have a top 10 team coming in here and be favored after coming off a performance like that. But I guess they don't build those casinos off of losing wagers too often out there.
Yeah. I it was funny. Like, I saw the line and I said, you know, Vegas must really know this Hurricanes team. They must really know the history of Manny Diaz's team, sort of the letdown, you know. And even the last couple of weeks, Miami's been favored by, you know, 9.5. They were favored by 2 touchdowns, I think, over Virginia. And they were in dogfights. And Manny Diaz is kind of like, he's just been saying over and over again, hey, it's all about going 1-0 week to week, right? That's really all it is for him. It's going 1-0. And so I think, you know, this Miami's going to this game, and it's kind of a different mentality, I think, than years past, where they kind of just thought, oh, we're, you know, like last year against Virginia Tech, sort of a perfect example. Jaren Williams throws those three first, whatever it was, first half interceptions, gets pulled out. They put in Nakosi Perry. I think there's a different mindset in the eyes of the players. I think they really do buy into this Manny concept now of, hey, we're going to be in a dogfight, be ready for it. And so I think it's good that they're underdogs, honestly, because if they were favored, I'd be worried. I'd be worried for Manny Diaz. I think it's sort of a wake-up call. But it is scary that Virginia Tech does play so well after a loss. And I guess my question to you is just, is this team different? You know, in other words, was that loss to Liberty the kind that maybe breaks their back? But obviously that hasn't been the case in the past.
Yeah, it's tough to tell. I mean, this team this year especially – I just can't get a read on this team. And I don't know if I could anywhere in the country. It's such a strange season with all the missed time and players coming in and out that consistency from week to week is really hard to tell. It's really difficult to predict. Like, I don't know how you could be in the prediction game this year, because I would just be losing left and right and over. But, you know, 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago now, they were 10.5 point favorites, something like that, going down to Wake Forest, did not play well, lose a game that I think a lot of people said they shouldn't have, and everybody goes, oh, here we go again, the season's over. Then they go up to Louisville, and they play pretty well. And that game was only a touchdown win, but they were up 21-0 in that game. They had to a pretty big lead. Louisville scored late to make it a one-score game like that, so they have done it this year where they had a disappointing performance and came out the next week and played pretty well. And even before that, North Carolina. I know that was a game that you know, they didn't quite have their whole defense there, but they turned it around the next week and played really well against Boston College. So, you know, two examples this year where they have not had the result that they wanted to and then come out the next week and look pretty dang good the next week. So should make for an interesting matchup.
Yeah, and the quarterbacks especially, because Hooker and De'Aaron are two of the most elusive quarterbacks in the country. I look at Pro Football Focus every now and then for these little interesting stats. They actually, among Power 5 QBs, have forced the most missed tackles, 23 each. I know Hooker, I think, ranks first in rushing among Power 5 quarterbacks this year, 515 yards. King ranks third with 406. King, I think, is a little bit better passer than Hooker, but not by much. I mean, it's kind of like it's just what he's done the last couple of weeks to help him out. But this is a great quarterback matchup just on paper. I mean, two really good quarterbacks.
Yeah, that was sort of the saving grace last week for Virginia Tech, is that Hendon Hooker really put the team on his back. And I think he had a game at Wake Forest that he was not happy with. It was a disappointing game, certainly relative to his standards. And he's come back since then and played exceptionally well. I think he had 3 touchdowns in the first 2 quarters against Louisville rushing. You know, really put the team on his back the other day with Herbert out, ran for 156. Those are big numbers for this guy. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the over-under is in this game, but I feel like I would take the over just based on how these quarterbacks are playing. I mean, you mentioned Derek King up there in number of missed tackles. He's going to add to that number this week because tackling has been an issue for Virginia Tech. I think this is going to be a great quarterback matchup, and I'm excited to see these two duke it out.
Now, one thing I will say, Virginia Tech's offensive line is by far better than Miami's if you take PFF at its face value. Darisaw, the left tackle, is I think the number one Power 5 offensive lineman in the country according to PFF in their rankings. Just the way that they have sort of developed that, because I don't remember Virginia Tech being this good on the offensive line, or are they overhyped? Am I overhyping them as an offensive line?
You don't remember them being this good on the offensive line because they have not been this good on the offensive line. I mean, it's been a long, really drawn-out decade of just bad offensive line play. Mm-hmm. They've just been trying to get the numbers up and trying to get the athleticism up and the continuity there, and it finally all came together this year. Darisaw, who's getting, you know, first-round draft pick buzz all of a sudden. He's in his third year as a starter on the left side. They have a couple guys, not both starter. One has gone in and started, Doug Nestor, and then Brian Hudson actually started for him last week. They were true freshmen last year, so they finally are coming around. Luke Tenuta on the right side is a sophomore this year who's grown into his body a bit. Then there's Brock Hoffman at center, who kind of brings that attitude to the group that was lacking last year. So I think they got better at the end of last year. Certainly a little bit better at running the ball, but this year it's just like across the board, left tackle to right tackle, it feels like they have some maulers up front. And they didn't exactly push Liberty around last week, which I think was disappointing for a lot of Hokies fans, but they still ran for 200 yards in that game. Mm-hmm. And you look back, I want to say in like 2013, sometime around there, like when Virginia Tech had a bad rushing game, it would have like 9 yards. Like we're talking not even getting into double digits, like sometimes, right. Like it was a struggle. And now when they don't have a good game, it's like, oh, they only ran for .180 in this game. I mean, it's a vastly different offense. And you know, they've worked long and hard to get this offensive line room right, just in terms of how many guys they have just competing for spots. And it's finally there. And this is a pretty strong group. I'm curious to see what they do against this Miami defensive front, because I think one thing you say about the Hokies, oh, who have they done it against? Have they really gone against any of the top defenses and pushed them around? So I think this is an opportunity, because Miami's got some real, you know, physical specimens and some athletes up there that can be tough to handle. So this will be one of the biggest challenges. They go Miami and then Pitt next week after this. That's a pretty tough back-to-back challenge for them.
Yeah, Miami's front this past game against NC State, Quincy Roche really got shut down, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was going up against one of the better offensive tackles in the conference and just couldn't get any pressure. But Jalen Phillips had a big day. I think he had 10 tackles, a sack, you know, a couple balls deflected at the line. So this will be a good matchup, I think, again, for Quincy Roche one-on-one. And, you know, he's a guy that came over from Temple that, you know, came to Miami because he wanted to win these matchups and prove that he could, you know, be NFL caliber guy, a complete player. And, you know, he didn't put up great film last week. So he's going to be motivated, I think, in this matchup one-on-one with Darisaw. The one thing
he was a guy that Virginia Tech thought they had.
Too. Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
He was looking at Virginia Tech to the point that I think the new D-line coaches were kind of like tweeting like, like nabbed another one or something like that. And then all of a sudden Roche pulled the okie doke and went down to Miami instead. They ended up with Justice Reed, who's been okay from Youngstown State. He's been a pretty good addition to this group in terms of getting after the quarterback. But I'm curious if there are any hard feelings left over from that on the Hokie side of the staff. We thought they had him locked up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. I was going to get to the thing with Miami was their pass defense this last game was pretty atrocious. They got beat in a lot of ways. And I know Virginia Tech has kind of got like a big three in the passing game. Tavion Robinson, James Mitchell, the tight end, and Trey Turner, the other receiver. Individually, is Robinson the best one, I guess, of the three? And what do you think of their receivers and what they've done?
Turner's the best of the three. He's a big play Trey. They've called him that since his freshman year He is the go-to guy, and he did it last week. Made some catches, especially, you know, they were down 28-21, had to go down, or 35-28, I should say, had to go down the field real quick and score, and they went to Turner a couple times there. When they need a spark in the passing game, he's been it. Robinson has been solid. He's a year behind Turner, so he's got a little bit more development to go. And then James Mitchell, big target in the as a tight end, he did not play last week. He's one of the guys that sat out. I think he had a lower body injury. They didn't really say. I remember him at Louisville sort of like testing something on the sidelines, seeing if he can run. It's pretty much been those three, though. They don't have a ton of faith in the other receivers beyond that. Had a couple transfers, Evan Ferris from Kansas, Changa Hodge from Villanova, that haven't really felt comfortable in the offense, I don't think. So they have tried to get Raheem Blackshear, the running back transfer from Rutgers, a little bit more involved in the passing game. I'd expected him to be more of a factor there than he has been this year. And, you know, last week, maybe a little bit of that is offset by the fact that he had to take over the starting tailback duties with Herbert out, so they couldn't really split him out wide as much. But I had expected them to involve him more in the slot and more in the passing game than what they have. So if they could get him going, or maybe get some of these other injured receivers back, couple younger guys like Elijah Bowick or Daryl Simmons, to get them going, I think it would make the coaches feel better about the receivers. But right now, it is a very small crew that they can depend on, and those guys are playing a lot of snaps, and that adds up over the course of the game, and you wonder how fresh some of these guys are by the end.
And Blackshear is a running back. I mean, just the difference between him and Herbert. I mean, they're both 5'9 guys. I think Herbert's, what, 15 pounds, about 15 pounds heavier than him. But I mean, you can see there's a big difference, right? There's a big drop-off between Blackshear and Herbert in terms of production.
There is, but the weird thing is, before the season, Blackshear was the one that everybody was talking up. I mean, coaches and players alike are saying, this guy is unbelievable. He's going to be the one that's going to... I mean, when they got him eligible, he had to get a waiver from the NCAA to get eligible. You know, Virginia Tech finally wins one of those waiver things. They'd been 0-2 last year in some pretty high-profile ones. They finally get it. Everybody's like, that's it. This is the key to the offense. And then it comes out there, and it turns out Khalil Herbert is the real deal, too. And he kind of took the spotlight there and was the featured back. You know, Blackshear missed some time earlier in the season for a couple weeks. He was out and couldn't practice. Did something to his hamstring in the opener against NC State. So I don't feel like he's been quite himself physically, and maybe we haven't seen, you know, the full Raheem Blackshear experience at this point. But, I mean, man, as soon as they got him to commit from Rutgers, I was hearing from, you know, coaches on the staff that, you know, they were just singing this guy's praises and saying, this guy could have gone anywhere in the country, and he came here, and he's a pretty darn good player. It's been interesting to me that we haven't quite seen that yet, because I feel like the hype hasn't quite matched what the production has been. But I do think he's a good player. I just think he kind of has to get in shape or whatever it is, or iron some things out.
Well, this is a game to sort of have a breakout, because I think Miami's had a drop off at linebacker since Shaq Quarterman and Michael Pinkney left. And I know the coaching staff this week said they felt like middle linebacker Brandon Jennings had his best game against NC State. But if you look at what they've been graded by Pro Football Focus, and even the coaches themselves have sort of acknowledged, yeah, we need better play from the linebackers. This was a game that I circled, you know, after a few weeks, and said, man, this Virginia Tech game is going to be really tough for Miami's run defense. And so that's going to be the pivotal point. I think if Miami can hold Blackshear down and make Virginia Tech more one-dimensional with Hooker and the receivers, I think that's how Miami wins this game.
You mean to tell me Shaq Quarterman and Michael Pinkney aren't still there as 12th-year seniors? I swear to God, those guys were there forever. I mean, started from like the second they got there, it seemed like they have been there for like a full decade.
10 years. It's crazy. Now Pinkney's on the practice squad with the Patriots, and Quarterman, I think, is a backup with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But they are finally gone. They're really gone.
To your point, yeah, I do think slowing the running game. I mean, if you can turn Virginia Tech into a team that has to pass it in a standard or traditional way, then Virginia Tech's offense is far less effective. I mean, they're just not built to play from behind like that, or to have to air it out to try to beat teams. They have to run it first, go off play action, you know, quarterback runs, screens, jet sweeps. They do all sorts of stuff, but just standing in the pocket and throwing it in a traditional way is not their forte.
the defense, obviously we knew when Bud Foster retired that there was going to be a drop off, but then you also had a bunch of COVID type of related absences, right? I mean, this defense, it's just, I'm just not used to seeing a Virginia Tech defense, you know, average giving up 31 points a game and to have some of the games that they've had. What have you seen from it? How do you sort of describe what's happened this year?
Yeah, it's sort of a combination of a bunch of things, I think. I think you go from Bud Foster to Justin Hamilton, and you go, oh, it's not a big transition because he's going to an assistant that was on staff who was a sort of a Bud protege. But they have changed some things with how they're doing things defensively, and maybe requiring their linebackers to make a few more tackles in space, or there's just changes to the defense that are going to happen that are tough to do in a pandemic year where you didn't have spring ball and you didn't have a chance for these players to get used to the coaches. On top of that, it's not quite the defense coming back that they expected from last year. Caleb Farley opts out in the summer. He's a cornerback, you know, probably going to be a mid to high first round pick. You know, Virginia Tech does not have a lot of those guys. So to lose somebody like that defensively is a big deal. Devin Hunter, safety that was going to step in as a starter this year, gets arrested. He's suspended all year. He's out right now. It was a felony charge, automatic suspension until anything is resolved in that sense. Jermaine Waller, an all-ACC honorable mention cornerback, has really not played up until last week. I mean, that was only the second game he played in this year. Deshaun Crawford, a starting defensive tackle, has been nicked up all year, hasn't played a whole lot. Tywan Garbutt was out in the preseason. He just recently came back and has started getting back into shape. You know, these are all guys that were projected starters this year that really have not played. And then that's on top of the guys coming in and out. You know, I think everybody's heard at this point about, you know, against Duke, they really didn't have any cornerbacks. We're down to like their fifth and sixth guys in that department. Against UNC, they didn't really have any safeties the next week. So it's just been, I mean, you can imagine trying to be a new defensive coordinator like Justin Hamilton on that side of the ball, and you have no spring. You have guys coming in and out. You're missing a bunch of guys that you thought you would have to begin with. It is just a moving target. It is tough to get things locked down. So I think that all factors in. I think the skill level on defense is just not what it's been at Virginia Tech in recent years. I mean, they are not a tall, rangy, fast defense like you always thought of when you thought of Bud Foster's defenses. And that's been going on for a couple years now. I mean, that's not something new. That's something that they're going to have to fix in recruiting and get some guys that are a little bit better athletes on that side of the ball. You know, you look at Rayshard Ashby, he's like 5'9", 5'10", if that. Doesn't look in the best shape this year. I mean, he revealed to us he had a COVID diagnosis earlier this year that kind of messed up a lot of his conditioning and stuff. You know, he's just not a long athlete that's going to get in a lot of, you know, passing lanes and stuff like that. And I think you have that across this whole defense. There's only a few guys you look at and you go like, oh, Divine Diablo, that guy looks like an NFL type player out there. There's not a lot of guys that you look at that defense, you say that is absolutely a fact about. So it's a little bit of a departure from what, you know, Bud Foster's heyday, where you had just athletes all over the field and you go, man, this is going to be a long afternoon going up against these guys.
And the one thing you got to say about De'Aaron King, he's 16 touchdowns, 4 picks. He doesn't turn the ball over a whole lot. And I saw from the Virginia Tech notes, I think they're 13-2 when they create, at least under Justin Fuente, when they have at least two or more interceptions. And of course, last year, Miami had 4 against them, which is why they ended up losing that game. They fell behind because of all those early turnovers. But the secondary, at least, I mean, on paper, I mean, you got that Shamari Connor guy who I guess is the nickel, and he's going to be, I guess, lined up a whole lot against Mike Harley in the slot. That's going to be a good matchup. Harley's really blown up the last 2 weeks for Miami.
Yeah, and Connor is among their best defensive players for Virginia Tech. I'd say him and Diablo in the secondary, certainly. And I think this year they're doing things defensively that maybe frees them up to play a little bit, to, you know, they're playing a little bit more zone on the back end. So they're not just, you know, sticking a guy on a receiver and saying, follow this guy wherever he goes. I think that's allowing them to see the field a little bit better and do a little bit more. Okay. And that's perhaps why you see Connor and Diablo getting in on so many more tackles and making so many more plays. But sometimes it feels like it's from week to week. Like they, 1 week the defense is forcing turnovers and flying around and all over the place. And then there's a week like last week where they just can't get off the field time and time again. It's third and two, and you know they run the ball, and it's a first down. They just can't get off the field under any circumstances.
All right, so I don't know if it's appropriate to ask for a prediction on a Monday, not knowing if our favorite running back, Khalil Herbert, is going to be playing in this game. I was going to call him Justin Herbert just for fun. What do you can I ask you for a prediction, or what's your feeling right now on Monday as for this game? What's going to happen?
My feeling is I think Virginia Tech plays a lot better than it did against Liberty. Do I think that's enough to win? I don't know, because I think Miami is a legit team this year, and I've seen them play, and you know I have some concerns about watching them about. The defense. What happened to the defense against NC State? I don't feel like NC State was a great offense with Hockman in the game at quarterback. Offensively, Derek King is legit, and he's going to be a problem all day for the Hokies. I wonder if it's a matter of can they slow him up enough, and then Hooker has a good enough day as a quarterback to score more points than them. I don't see this game being 16-13 or anything like that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
but I do think Virginia Tech will compete. I just don't know if it's enough to beat a team like Miami.
Right. All right. Well, it should be. Look, Vegas is usually pretty right, right? I mean, they usually get it right, and they've got Virginia Tech as the favorite, and they must know that Miami's due for a letdown. That's what I think. I feel like they've seen Miami sort of skate by the last couple of weeks, and they're expecting this to be a tough matchup. I am. Anytime they go into Blacksburg, I think, okay, this is not going to be good. This is not going to be good for Miami. But, you know, the road teams in this series have managed to win quite a bit. So who knows?
Yeah, it hasn't been – it doesn't matter where the game's played. It feels like it's going to be a strange outcome. I mean, I remember Miami coming up here, was it 2014, mm-hmm. on a Thursday night, and they just ran Virginia Tech off
Duke
the
Johnson.
Field.
Duke Johnson went bananas.
It was as much of a butt-kicking in Lane Stadium as I've ever seen. And I've been covering this team now almost 10 years. I mean, that game was one where it's just like, I think at that point, everybody knew like that's the beginning of the end for mm-hmm. the Frank Beamer time here. Like it was just like laid bare the problems that they were having. So, And then like, you know, last year in Miami, they go down there, Virginia Tech goes down there and plays like the game of its lives to pull out of a funk in that game. And a couple years ago, I remember them going down there and like, Trey Edmonds ran for like four touchdowns in a game where it's just like, where did this come from? They're just weird results in this game. So, you know, we can sit here and make predictions on a Monday and we'll probably look pretty stupid on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. And the Herbert thing is going to be a big deal, because if he plays, I think Miami's in trouble, but that hamstring thing will be tricky. So, we'll see. Andy, I appreciate it, man. And, you know, be sure to not only read what Andy writes in The Athletic, but check out his podcast, Atlantic and Coastal. I joked with you last week on my radio show how you could have come up with a more creative name. And what was it that Carlos gave you? Carlos Ledo, one of my co-hosts. What did he say was a better name?
I can't remember. It was something good, and I made a mental note of it. Now I've all of a sudden
forgotten.
Yeah. Maybe I don't want to remember it because we've already branded the podcast. I'm like, I can't change the name at this point. We just started this thing.
Well, I would ask you about Clemson and Notre Dame, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be the topic on your podcast. So I'll just tell everybody to listen to that. Great pod, by the way. I love the fact that you have so many different guests on there. And this conference has been fun. I'm kind of hoping, I know it's not going to happen, I'm kind of hoping Notre Dame sticks around, because it makes it a lot more interesting, even more interesting than it already is with just how wacky the Coastal is. So
I've got bad news for you. There's no way that's happening.
A guy can hope.
If you can have less than 0%.
That's what's going to happen, yeah. All right, well, so much for that. All right, man. Thank you, Andy.
All right, thanks for having me.
305-954-568. This is the state of Miami. Y'all know y'all come down that way.